The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Until we reach the summer solstice, in the continuing cycle of light to dark, dark to light, life to death, death to life. And this transitional time of year often inspires us to take stock of where we are in our own life cycle. Sometimes we take inventory of the events of the past year, search for meaning in those events, consider what we learned from them. We might even consider what of the past year we would like to leave behind us and what we hope to build, to hold on to and carry forward into the new year. And tempted by wishful thinking, some people a list of what they aspire to change in the coming year. Spend less time on social media. Stop binging on Netflix series, whatever. Lay off the donuts, at least after 10 o'clock in the morning, or something like that, right? Which people never follow through on, but that's another story. But this morning service focuses on the process of weighing what to hold on to and what to let go of, and of considering what we make of ourselves in the coming months. I'm Jerry Lazaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Our fellowship is a principle-based, liberal, welcoming faith community in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, and on the web at tpuuf.org. And on behalf of the fellowship, I welcome everyone this morning, in person and online. Whoever you are, wherever you may be on your life's journey, on your spiritual journey, whatever you must in conscience truly and responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, we welcome you and invite you to worship with us this morning, beginning with the opening words from As a New Year Begins. These are written by Reverend Kate Lohr. And Gina Mastrangeli will share Reverend Lohr's words with us, after which we'll light our chalice and our peace lamp.
Great Spirit of light, of life, as the new year begins, we turn inward and reflect about the state of our lives. As we pause from our regular rhythms of rush, 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 we open ourselves to new possibilities, new perspectives. We give thanks for these moments and for the wisdom they afford us. May they help bring us together in the sacred dynamics of life so that we, as individuals and as members of this community, might reach our full potential.
Thank you, Judy. The chalice and the flame together symbolize our free faith. Throughout the ages, people all over the world gave fire a special place in their religious practice, no? They had fires in their homes, of course, to cook and to keep warm, but they also had sacred fires in their temples. They set sacred lamps on their altars. They lit sacred bonfires outside on the hilltops and in the groves. They placed sacred torches near the graves of those who died. We still do that in Arlington Cemetery, right? The grave of the unknown soldier, there's a perpetual flame burning. And last month, we lit candles in observance of the season of Advent and the Feast of Hanukkah. But when we Unitarian Universalists gather, we always light a chalice. This is our sacred fire. And we light our chalice this morning with words by Reverend Sarah Eileen Lawal. Now, we'll recite these words responsively. Gina Mastrangeli will lead you in reciting the congregational responses, which appear in boldface on the slide, so shouldn't miss them, right? They'll be behind me or on your screen at home. So, Gina, you'll help me with this. Okay. Out of the flames of fear, we rise with courage of our deepest convictions to stand for justice, inclusion, and peace.
Out of the flames of scrutiny, we rise to proclaim our faith with hope to heal a fractured and hurting world.
Out of the flames of doubt, we rise to embrace the mystery, wonder, and awe of all there is and all that is yet to be.
Out of the flames of hate, we rise with the force of love, love that celebrates our shared humanity.
Out of the flames, we rise. And as I light the peace lamp, I again invite you to participate responsively with the words and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us. Now, let's join in singing our gathering song, hymn number 350, The Ceaseless Flow of Endless Time. The melody is from an African-American spiritual. It's a tune that we should be familiar with because it's also the musical setting of Let Freedom Span Both East and West, which we've sung here many times. The words of this song were penned by a British Unitarian Universalist minister named John Andrew Story. And he's probably one of the most prolific UU lyricists of all time. Reverend Story authored no fewer than 32 hymns for the Hymns for Living 1985 British Unitarian Collection. And 14 of those hymns appear in our gray hymnal, Singing the Living Tradition. I'll play it through once to remind us all of the tune. I hope we're still in tune here. Let's see. Yeah, I think we are. That's good. And the words should appear on the screen behind me and on your screen at home. Slower.
The ceaseless flow of endless time, no one can check or stay. We'll view the past with no regret, nor future with dismay. The present slips into the past, and dreamlike melts away. The breaking of tomorrow's dawn begins anew today. The past and future ever meet in the eternal now. To make each day a thing complete will be our New Year's vow.
I didn't hear you singing. Next time, you sing, okay. Okay. As mentioned, that one of the things that's most attractive to me about this particular faith community is that we draw from so many sources, not just from one book or from the tradition of one culture in one part of the world at one particular time. And as you know, I mentioned that I often take a great deal of inspiration and find a great deal of wisdom in Buddhist tales. Buddhism derives from the word buddhi, B-U-D-H-I, which means to awaken. And Buddhist philosophy encourages us to open our eyes and all of our senses and also our minds to embrace the truths of human existence. And one of the paths to awakening, as we all know, is meditation. Often in some sects of Buddhism, something called koans, which are riddles or puzzles, paradoxes, which reason can't really cut through. And also, this wisdom comes to us through stories, through tales. And I'd like to share with you two tales this morning. Buddhist tales don't come with prepackaged titles. But for the sake of identifying them in this service, I've dubbed them Knowing Where to Look and Devadatta and Buddha. So here's the first one, Where to Look. And I need some help. Do we have any people back there? Gina, would you help me? Hannah, maybe Ryan, Corinne, would you help me here? I need some help up on stage for this. Okay? And Indy. Oh, my gosh, sure. Come on up, honey. Oh, this is great. Okay. Now, you guys are going to be the villagers. Okay? All right. Come on. And Gina, you can help us too. Okay? All right. Come up right here. Come up here. Right here. Right here. Okay. All right. You guys are going to be the villagers. No, no, no. Go ahead. You guys are the villagers. Okay? And you're going to act out some of what's going on in the story. Okay? It's pretty easy to figure out what it is. But I want you to react. Right? If you hear something, for instance, that seems a little bit strange, you know, how would you react? Okay? All right. Well, one afternoon, some people in a village walking past the house of an old woman, and they saw her outside the house, right, looking on the path very, very diligently, right? Well, being very kind and compassionate people, since they were Buddhists, right, they decided they would help the woman. So they started looking too. So let's look. All right, okay. And you said, well, what did you lose? And the woman said, well, I lost a sewing needle. Oh, okay, so everybody starts looking for the sewing needle all over there, right? Okay. And they looked, and they looked, and they looked, and they didn't find anything. And after a while, one of the villagers finally piped up and said, you know, this path is kind of long, and a needle is small. Can you give us a little better idea about where this needle might be? And the woman said, oh, I lost it inside the house. Well, you can imagine the look on their faces. And finally, one of them stuttered out, well, are you out of your mind? Why are we looking out here if you lost the needle inside the house? And the woman said, well, it's dark inside my house. Out here, there's a lot of sunlight, and it's easier to see. Now, there's certain questions that come up with this story, right? Like, all right, she was looking inside because it was easier. No, she was looking outside because it was easier to see, right? But what she wanted was actually where? Inside, okay? So the question becomes, it's important to know where to look, right? So if you're missing something, or if you feel that something is missing, right? Perhaps in you or in your life, where should you look? Should you look outside? Or should you look inside? Okay, all right. Thank you. I hope that. Okay, you guys can take a seat. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Good job, guys. Yeah. And the second story called Devadatta and Buddha. All right. And even though Buddha was one of the most compassionate and kind people who ever existed, as far as the story of him goes, he did have some enemies, including a cousin named Devadatta, who didn't like him very much and was probably kind of jealous of his fame and his acceptance by other people. And Devadatta was not above trying to harm Buddha. Well, one day, Buddha was walking along a path below a hill, and he was in contemplation, and he had a very benign smile on his face. And Devadatta happened to be on top of the hill, and beside Devadatta was a big rock. And Devadatta picked up that rock, and he threw it. Now, fortunately, it missed Buddha and landed beside him. Buddha realized what was going on, just continued to walk with a smile on his face. And a couple days later, he happened to bump into Devadatta, and he greeted him very warmly. And Devadatta was shocked. And he said, aren't you angry with me? And Buddha said, no. And even more shocked then, Devadatta said, why not? And Buddha said, well, you're not the same person who 3 days ago threw that rock, and I'm not the same person who 3 days ago watched the rock fall beside him. But your question, I guess, is can people change? Does a short passage of time mean that someone is different? What do we contain that we always have with us, and what do we, in a sense, have the ability to shed, particularly our identities and also our feeling about our relationships and about other people. And this gets us today to where we want to be, I think, in terms of our message, right? So my message today is in two parts. So my message this morning is in two parts. In the first, we'll explore the difference between two mindsets regarding the self. That is, two ways of looking at ourselves. And two kinds of self-talk. That is, what we say to ourselves about ourselves. Right? Okay. And the second part involves a ceremony adapted from a ritual that was developed in the Unity Church community many years ago, but which has spread to others, including our Unitarian Universalist faith community. In fact, this ceremony, sometimes called a fire communion, you know, we have a flower communion and a water communion, well, this we could call a fire communion. This is observed in many Unitarian Universalist communities around this time of year. It offers an opportunity to reflect on what we would like to let go of in ourselves and in our lives in the coming year, what we might even aspire to change, and along with that, what we hope to hold on to and to carry with us into the new year. And the second part involves a little bit of magic, which I think we'll all enjoy. You better enjoy it, because I had to go all the way up to Reading to get this stuff. Apparently, there's only one store left in Pennsylvania that sells it. Anyway, a while back, I came across an article titled Fixed Versus Growth, Two Mindsets That Shape Our Lives. And the subtitle of the article was How to Fine-Tune the Internal Monologue, that is the self-talk, that scores every aspect of our lives from leadership to love. Well, that sounded pretty interesting, you know. So the article referred to a book by a Stanford University psychologist, Carolyn Dweck. And Professor Dweck writes about how our beliefs affect how we live, beliefs we're aware of, and sometimes beliefs that we're not even aware of, that are actually guiding our behavior. And Dweck explains how changing even the simplest of these beliefs can have profound impact on nearly every aspect of our lives. The beliefs she was particularly interested in were beliefs we hold about ourselves, beliefs that are reflected in what we tell ourselves about ourselves. In her research over several decades, Professor Dweck identified two very different mindsets. She called them a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. A fixed mindset, she writes, assumes that our character, our intelligence, our abilities are static givens, which we really can't change in any meaningful way. If we maintain a fixed mindset, we measure our value in proving to ourselves, and to others, of course, that we have the fixed traits, the intelligence, the friendliness, the beauty, the creativity, the compassion even, right? Or skill at some particular task, like playing soccer, or at drawing, or writing, or singing, or playing an instrument. Right? People with a fixed mindset fixate, pardon the pun, on measuring up to some standard. And the way they maintain this view is to strive for success in all things and at all costs, and to avoid failures, or at least to acknowledge failures. Sounds like somebody we know. A growth mindset, on the other hand, views the self as changing and developing in response to the world around them, to what they experience, to the relationships they develop. Now, growth-minded people thrive on challenge. And they see failure not as evidence of a deficit or a lack of something, of creativity, of intelligence, of whatever, right? Of skill at cooking. My cake flopped. What am I going to do? The growth-minded self sees challenges and the inevitable failures we all experience as opportunities for growth and for stretching our existing abilities. And there's a big difference then in how we value ourselves, how we apply good or bad feelings about ourselves. A person with a fixed mindset is driven by the hunger for approval. Right? I've got to constantly be reinforced that, yes, I am this, I am that. Right? Whereas a person with a growth mindset is driven by a passion for learning. Dweck writes, "Why waste time proving over and over how great you are when you could be getting better? Why hide deficiencies instead of overcoming them, or at least trying to? Why look for friends or partners who will just shore up your self-esteem instead of ones who will also challenge you to grow?" And she continues, "Why seek out the tried and true instead of experiences that will stretch you? The passion for stretching yourself and sticking to it, even or especially when it's not going well, is the hallmark of the growth mindset." And the bottom line is that this mindset allows us to thrive during some of the most challenging times in our lives. And that's not necessarily a new idea, right? You can see that idea reflected in the tale of Devadatta and Buddha. You can see it in the writings of the Stoic philosophers dating back 2,500 years to Zeno of Citium, right? And what did Winston Churchill say to the British people during the most dark times of World War II? He said, "Success is not final, failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts." That bears repeating. Success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts. And this contrast in mindsets applies to our spiritual lives as well. I mean, those of us who've gravitated toward Unitarian Universalism generally have done so out of a strong desire to reach beyond fixed boundaries of belief, beyond prescribed beliefs about the existence of a higher power, about the nature of the universe, about the meaning and purpose of life on earth. We come because we want to stretch ourselves beyond inflexible ideas about what makes us truly human, what constitutes gender, who we can love and how we can love, etc. But then there's always the temptation to become a little too self-satisfied with the progress we've already made. We've broken free of the change forged by others to restrict what we believe and how we express our beliefs. We've stepped over boundaries that were set by others on who we are and how we can live our lives. But are we equally flexible when it comes to our own beliefs, the ones that we forged for ourselves? If we truly embrace a growth mindset, we still question, we still seek. Maybe we've determined, well, there is no God. But then again, maybe I'll think about that. Maybe I'll still question, right? Maybe the universe was created out of something or nothing, whatever. But let me think about that. So we still question, we still seek. We still seize opportunities to grow even beyond the belief system we forge for ourselves. And we see people as the Buddha saw himself and his nemesis, Devadatta, not the same person who on a given day threw a stone or who was a target of a stone. Which brings us to the second part of this morning's message, the burning bowl ceremony. Now, the burning bowl is a ritual that has been practiced for many centuries across many different groups. And the point is to release the past, help us to release the past and what is no longer serving us, to make space for what is to come. Fire is a powerful force, right? It can consume and destroy, but it also can create, as in firing a ceramic pot, right? Vase, right? And it can cleanse, and it can inspire. For centuries, indigenous people used smoke as a symbol of their thoughts and prayers rising to the Great Spirit. Whatever the circumstances, the purpose of the ceremony is to shift our consciousness, right? It's about becoming still, naming what you want to release, and then making it a concerted attempt to let it go. What's that song from Frozen? Let it go, let it go. Right, okay, that kind of thing, right? Across millennia, human beings have lit lamps or torches or candles in religious rituals. Are they prayers? Sometimes. Are they remembrances? Many times. Are they unspoken hopes and desires? Probably so. Anyway, so we're going to do two things here, right? We're going to spend the time, we're going to get settled in our seats, we're going to think a little bit about something that, looking back on the past year, or maybe even a little bit beyond that, something that we said, you know, I'd really like to get rid of this. I'd like to let this go, okay? And you'll have a chance to write this down on a very special slip of paper, which I'll pass out to you. We should have enough, I don't know if we'll have enough pencils. I hope we'll have enough. We may have to share a little bit here. To write on that piece of paper something you'd like to let go. And then we also want, in the same process, to think a little bit here, what is something that we really, truly want to hold on to? Something that we want to make sure that we carry with us into the new year. And we'll have some paper for you to write that down on. In fact, it'll be Post-it note paper. You could actually take it home, pin it up on your refrigerator, so you see it every time you go to get that extra bit of food that you're saying, no, I don't want to do that. Anyway, it's a long story. Okay. All right. Okay. So let me encourage you now. Take a deep breath. Maybe, shrug your shoulders a little bit. Release some tension. Get comfortable in your seat, your feet straight up, flat on the floor. And I just want you to take a couple of deep breaths and try to clear your mind a little bit. Try not to think of what you want to do after the service or what happened last night or whatever. But think about right now, the eternal now, right? And just clear your mind a little bit. Okay, take some deep breaths. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe in, hold the breath a little bit, and then breathe it out. Okay, just get into a relaxed state, right? And when you feel your mind is calm and you feel a sense of restfulness and openness, begin to ask yourself, what is no longer serving me well? What part of my life is causing some dis-ease or discomfort? Thing that's making you uncomfortable, or a sense that all is not well. And is there something in the past that's holding you back from living the life that you want to live, or a fuller life? Is there something holding you back? And this can include, but is not limited to, certain people, certain behaviors, certain beliefs, certain habits. Okay, think, just take a few moments and try to formulate as succinctly, as compactly as you can, what that is. What's no longer serving me? What's causing me dis-ease or discomfort? Is there something holding me back from the life that I want to live? Are there certain people, certain behaviors, certain beliefs, certain habits? All right, now take a few moments to think, what do you want more of in your life? What would you like to make more space for? What do you want to feel, to experience, to manifest, to show? And don't let sneaky thoughts or fear or doubt stop you from thinking about that. And always think here as an affirmative statement, not something you don't want, but something you do want, a positive, an affirmative statement. A little tricky. Yeah. Now I'm giving you a little piece of paper here. It's very thin, you can see. Yeah, you can use a pen on it. You can use a pen or a pencil on it. This is, there you go. Now, as I said, this is very special paper here. It's magical. Here you go. Whoops. And on this thin little piece of paper here, I want you to write down something. Maybe you can only fit one thing or two, but you could use the back as well. Oops, I think I gave you two. That's all right. As long as I have enough of them. Say, this stuff is in short supply, folks. Yes. Would you believe it? You can. Oh, I don't want you to give you a torn one here. You take a good one here. Mike? Indy? And Nicole? There you go. You can have one too. Would you guys like one? Okay. All right. Okay. Okay, here we go. All right. And Gina will pass out a post-it note thing. Do we have enough for everybody? And a pencil. You could use a pen too as well. All right. Now, on that thin tissue paper, you put what it is you'd like to let go of. Oh, you... I'm sorry. Here's that, okay. Which is hard. It's a little hard. You'll have to... But if you have one of those post-it notes, you can... Or here. You can use this to rest it on. Okay, there you go. On that thin paper, you're going to put something that you really would like to get rid of, let go of. And this could be something, you know, in your own habits or behavior, something that's in your environment. Oh, I really would like to divest myself of that if I could. All right. Okay. That's good. These are working. Okay. And on the post-it note then, something that you really want to have more of, something you would definitely like to, or something you have now and you definitely want to make sure that you hold on to that as you move into the new year. Now, when you're ready then, if you have put something on that tissue paper, come forward, and we almost don't need a burning bowl because this is magic paper, as I said. Now, if you come up and hand me that paper, I will make sure that whatever you have on that paper disappears with no trace whatsoever. That's the magic. Okay? All right, we have it right here. Okay, thank you, Phil. I told you it's magic.
To be done with care, I think.
Yes, yes. There you go. I told you it was magic. Thank you. Whoop, uh-oh. You know what? I'm going to use that candle here. I think this will be better. If I can get the wick up here. Ah, here we go. That's even better. I'm already letting go. Okay. There we go. We got to get this. Ta-da. Ta-da. See this? Here, you want to? Here, do it. Just let it go. And it disappears into thin air. Look at that. Did you ever see anything so wonderful? Wow. Okay, Becky. Cam? Whoop. Wow. There you go.
Whoop.
Oh, okay. Ta-da. Here we go. Oh, this feels so good. I don't know. Sabrina. Hi, honey. Francesca. Joe. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to burn that one. There you go. Thank you. There you go. Corinne. Okay. Here. You want to hold it? And just let go quick. Quick, quick. You didn't burn your finger, did you? No. You really can't burn your finger. Okay. Here. I'll take that now. There you go. Thank you. Ah, Gina. There you go. The great Karnak. Oh, wait a minute. We got another one? Karnak the Magnificent. Right? Whatever. Okay. It was funny. I went up to this magic shop, and this guy, he is, how could you put it? He is a, I don't know what you want to call it. He is a devotee of magic. This guy, I mean, he talked about, and he, actually, he told me the whole story about how he had mentored this young magician who wound up actually making a career and actually appeared on the Penn and Teller show. You know, the one where people try to stump Penn and Teller? And he stumped them. Yeah. And he has a list. He puts a pin where everybody has come from who's come to the store on the map of the United States. People have come from California, from Arizona, whatever, to come to his little shop. Yeah. A real character. And he actually sold me a magic trick. he said the first one he ever used. I was going to do it for you today, but I'll save that for another day. Okay. It was fun, actually, you know. Okay. All right. Now, To complete this, I think what you want to do is then consider what's on that post-it note there and say, what small steps could you take to create that change? I mean, one of the worst things, I think, one of the worst detriments when we're trying to look ahead to do something is to kind of look globally. Say, oh, you know, think the big thing, right? Say, no, what do we do in the next week? What do we do in the next 2 weeks or the next month in order to make that happen? Can you apply for that job you're too afraid you wouldn't get? Can you take some time, even though you say you don't have it, to meditate every day? Or I was reading the other day, someone who said, you know, in her busy life, or whether she couldn't find the time to write, and then she finally said, you know what, there's this Japanese form of poetry called the haiku, which is just 17 syllables, you know, whatever, three lines. At least I can do three lines a day, maybe. And so she committed herself to, regardless of what was going on, to write those three lines every day, you know. Sometimes it was only one line, but she was making progress, right? Can you set a boundary with a friend who has been draining your life force, right? So small, simple steps create a ripple effect that eventually lead to transformations, right? To making changes every day, and then watch how these things begin to show up in your life. Well, I have to thank everybody for participating in that. I wasn't sure you'd all get into it, but I'm glad you did. Right? We've come to that period of the service, which we reserve every week for those among us experiencing a joy, lifting their spirits up, or a sorrow, weighing their spirits down, to bring that joy or sorrow or concern to the light of this faith community. So now I invite you to think a little bit about something that you are experiencing that's giving you joy, something that is weighing you down, and after a brief period of musical meditation here, we'll open this mic up for you to share that with us.
This time of sharing to a close momentarily.
Is anyone on? No?
And if we do not have anyone else in the sanctuary or online who would care to share, we will bring this time of sharing to a close. On many weeks, we sing Spirit of Life, but today we are going to do it a little bit differently, and I will pass to Jerry.
Yes. You know, this time of year, you think about people you knew, and this came to me, first of all, because I think this is a very appropriate song for this morning. Secondly, because I knew the person who wrote these alternative words. We all know the tune here. This is the Finlandia tune. Da-dee-da-dee, da-dee-da-da-da-dee-da. But the words are written by James Curtis, who was a member of the Unitarian congregation I first joined. And he died soon after I joined, however. I didn't know him that well, but I did know his wife and his children. And so carrying on his memory, this is May I Who Live. And we're doing it in this key, so I'll just give you a little sense of it, what it is. Are we on? Is the mic on here? All right, okay. Okay, all right. So, let's go.
May I who live be true unto my being, one in my thoughts, my words, and every deed. I was born free, an ever-changing river is what I am, and neighbor, so are you. We have the power through laughter, love, and tears to face all fears and live forever free.
And before we sing our closing song, I'd like to offer a little bit of history about this and a few observations. It's Auld Lang Syne. I think we all should be singing Auld Lang Syne on New Year's Day, right? Okay. Well, common knowledge has it that the great Scottish poet Robert Burns wrote the words. It's more historically accurate to say that Burns wrote down the words. He himself claimed that he heard the words recited in a pub by an old Scotsman. Now, given Burns' wordsmithing skill, we could probably safely assume that he reworked the lines a bit, but the point is, no one knows who the original author of Auld Lang Syne is. Not only is the origin of the lines obscure, but the meaning often is as well. The title itself, in Scottish dialect, sounds like gibberish. Auld Lang Syne translates literally, old long since. That's what it means, old long since, literally, right? Contemporary English interpretations usually come up with things times long past or times long ago, right? But the real confusion stems from what the song is telling us. Is it telling us we should forget the acquaintances we've made? Never bring them to mind? Do you remember that wonderful scene from When Harry Met Sally? You've all seen that movie, right? Billy Crystal's baffled Harry wonders, what does this song mean? My whole life, I don't know what this song means. I mean, should old acquaintance be forgot? Does that mean we should forget our old acquaintance? Or does it mean that if we happen to forget them, we should remember them? Which is not possible because we already forgot them. And Sally reasons, well, maybe it just means that we should remember that we forgot them or something. Anyway, it's about old friends. And that really is what the song is about. Because the word acquaintance in the dialect of the early 19th century in Scotland and before means something quite different, right? Today we associate the word with acquaintances, that people we've known, right? Perhaps people we've befriended or loved, right? But in old times since, the word meant the experiences, the social interactions that we had with others. And we should never forget, if you look at the lyrics, should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind is not a policy statement, it's a question. Should old acquaintance be forgotten, never brought to mind? That's really what it is, right? And because we don't often sing the middle verses, we miss the fact that It's exactly what it's saying is no, we shouldn't. Because the middle verses are talking about his experiences with an old friend. We too have run about the hills and picked the daisies fine, but we've wandered many a weary foot since auld lang syne. We too have paddled in the stream from morning sun till dine, but seas beyond us broad have roared since auld lang syne. So even with the passage of time, it's those memories we have of our relationships that make those memories worth holding on to. And that's really what that song is about. But as I say, it kind of like goes flying over people's heads because we don't really do it upright. So we'll just sing the verses we usually sing. But keep in mind that when you think of those middle verses, this song is really about remembering old friends and cherishing relationships. Now here we go. Oops. And I should get the music to this because there's an awful lot going on in it here. Okay. All right. So let's just, I think you'll be able to pick it up with this. Yeah. All right. Okay. Should old acquaintance, are we with me here? Okay, ready, let's go. Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne? For old lang syne, my dear, for old lang syne, we'll pick a cup of kindness yet for old lang syne. And here's a hand, my trusty friend, and give a hand of thine. We'll take a cup of kindness yet for old lang syne. For old lang syne, my dear, for old lang syne. We'll take a cup of kindness yet for old lang syne. Now we'll extinguish our chalice, but we never extinguish its light of truth or the warmth of compassion or the fire of commitment to truth, justice, equality, peace, which it symbolizes. And our closing words this morning are again from Reverend Kate Lohr's prayer, As a New Year Begins. As we step across this threshold, let this new year be a year of greater awe and gratitude, of deeper kindness and acceptance, and more courageous acts of conviction for a kinder, more equitable, and sustainable world is not only possible, she's on her way. And in this sacred community, we can hear her breathing. So be it, and amen. Please stay with us for our announcements, which I think Mike McNeil is going to deliver this morning. Thank you very much.